Hey, all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Aren't you sick of the neocons and the Israel lobby pretending as though they've earned some kind of monopoly on foreign policy wisdom in Washington, D.C.? These peanut clowns who've never been right about anything? Well, the Council for the National Interest is pushing back, putting America first, and telling the lobby to go take a hike. The empire's bad enough without the neocons making it all about the interests of a foreign state. Help CNI promote peace. Visit their site at councilforthenationalinterest.org and click donate under About Us at the top of the page. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's the Scott Horton Show. I'm him. Appreciate y'all tuning in today. My website is scotthorton.org. You can find all my interview archives. There are more than 2,800 of them now going back to 2003 at scotthorton.org. You can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /Scott Horton Show. So share and retweet me at /Scott Horton Show. All right, so I mentioned to you guys earlier on the show, there was this thing in the Rolling Stone. New report documents the human cost of U.S. drone strikes in Yemen. And human rights activists interview witnesses to the strikes' civilian casualties. Well, I have on the line the author, the activist who wrote this study. It's Karim Sayad from Al Karama in Switzerland. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Did I get your, did I get that right? Al Karama is the organization, and did I say your name right?
Yeah, everything was right. The only thing is I didn't write directly the report. I contributed with my buddy in Yemen to coordinate and to write it, but mainly the inquiries on the ground were done by my friend and colleague Mohammed Al Ahmadi, who is our coordinator in Sana'a, Yemen.
I see.
So it's teamwork.
Okay, good deal. All right, and now, so what you've done here is you've gone back to as many drone strikes as you could document. Was it? I know that the numbers are vague about how many drone strikes there have even been since 2002, and obviously the vast majority of those in the Obama years. You say between 134 and 266 attacks. How many of those were you able to go back to the scene of the crime and interview witnesses?
So we basically in our reports document 10 strikes. There are many more. Then some of them are difficult to document because they were on roads and there are just no nothing left when some, for example, you shoot a motorcycle or a car on the middle of nowhere, they just take all the rest away. But the 10 that we documented were the one we could accede to, and as well where some of the strikes which targeted lots of civilians and were most discussed in Yemen. So that was mainly the thing.
Mm-hmm. And now, before we get into, and we have half an hour, well, 25 minutes, so we'll have plenty of time for you to tell the individual stories. But first of all, just on the overall numbers, you say in the report it's something between 1,150 and 1,952. Civilians,
yeah,
or total Yemenis killed in these strikes?
So that's one of the main problem. And what is a civilian, what is a fight?
Right.
Sometimes the limits between the two is not clear. And one of the most biggest problem is the fact that both U.S. and Yemeni government doesn't communicate on the casualties. Basically, it would help us to tell if the Yemeni government or the U.S. government would tell us, okay, we killed this one, and he did that, and that. The thing is that having these numbers and these figures, plus the fact that the attacks we documented, the vast majority of the people were civilian casualties, children, women, and things, is not very, it's not something like, I don't know how to tell it, but it's just that it raises big concerns about the civilian casualties and from this policy, because at the end, we have some cases, for example, of people as well killed in these attacks who were jailed by Yemeni authorities for 3 or 4 years without being judged on terror-related charges. But or even people spent 3 years in jail for terror-related charges but were released innocent and were killed 2 or 3 months after the release. So in these facts, in these cases, for example, how can you say that you couldn't arrest them and that they were imminent threats to the security of the U.S., for example?
Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, and of course, with the signature strikes, basically what they're saying is anyone that they kill was a militant, or else we wouldn't have killed them. That's basically, if you ask the Americans or ask the Yemeni government, the fact that they're dead means they were guilty. And even in even in America, where at least half the population is armed, when it comes to killing people with remote control planes in other countries, if a man has a rifle, well, then that is proof that he's Al-Qaeda militant warrior, whatever, because what's he going to do? Put on an Al-Qaeda uniform? So an AK is the uniform. An AK is all you need to be guilty to a remote control plane operator, you know, based back in Nevada or in New York State.
Yeah. So, one of the other things that the Yemeni, because I went to Yemen, I just came back a month ago, and one of the things as well for Yemeni people regarding these strikes is they don't basically understand why Americans so far away kill people, even if they are Al-Qaeda militants, for the single fact that most of the casualties of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula are Yemenis. So they say, okay, maybe we don't agree with them, basically, and we are the first casualties of this group. So why do you come, moreover, to kill lots of innocents and people, moreover? And that's it's something, at the end, that strengthens Al-Qaeda instead of combating it. And I spoke to many activists and lawyers and people involved in the cause, and they all say the drone strikes made Al-Qaeda stronger than ever in Yemen, because it's now the only radical way of being against the U.S. and the government policy, which acknowledges all the strikes. So basically, if the strategy is to weaken Al-Qaeda, these strikes are definitely not contributing to weaken them.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
from now all the people I heard.
Okay, now this is a very important thing that you're getting to right there, and it's not just the second part about how we're making more enemies by doing this, because it's important that David Gregory asked Leon Panetta, the former head of the CIA, that, hey, people keep saying that in Yemen, that every time you kill some Al-Qaeda guys with a drone or try to and kill innocent people, that that recruits more Al-Qaeda people. And Panetta, because, of course, there's no accountability, so Panetta just said, look, these are the tools we have. These are the bad guys that we have to kill, and so we got to do it. And if we're making matters worse, well, geez, I guess we'll just have to kill them, too, and we'll just have to keep digging this hole in order to get out of it. And that's bad enough. I'm sorry for going on so long, but this is a very important point that you just made that I think we really need to focus on, which is that I think if I understood what you're saying correctly, Kareem, you're saying the people of Yemen hate Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, those guys are the scum of the earth. They're horrible. And the people of Yemen would get rid of them themselves if we would not intervene. So not only are we swelling their ranks, but they might have ceased to exist by now if we had not been drone striking them.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I think it's maybe not as black or white as you say, but definitely there is something like this. Let me explain you. For example, an attack we document in our report, which is the Rabia attack, which killed, if I don't much fault, 12 or 14 civilians. It was a total mistake from the U.S. and the Yemeni, as ever. So the Yemeni, they tell we did the strike. Then a lot of people, when they come to try to check, they see it's impossible for the Yemeni army to lead such strikes. because they just don't have the weapon to do so. And then, so we know it's American people, or even in some cases we have doubts of Saudi airstrikes, but we have no proof for that. The thing is now, when you take this attack, for example, and you have people, so Yemen is a very poor country now, and you have the father of a family, maybe the guy has, I don't know how many children, you kill this father. And so, and then it's maybe the brother who will be in charge of three additional people, and he doesn't have money. So then when you have an Al-Qaeda guy coming and giving him money to revenge and to take care of these children, how can he refuse? Because basically the government, Yemeni government in the U.S., say in some cases, okay, when they do mistakes, they pay for people. But in fact, it was never the case. So from the, or when it was the case, it was such small amounts, like $200 for a father of family or something like this. But basically, they just, we never documented the, all the places we went, they were not, they didn't receive compensation for all the civilian casualties we found. And the other thing is, the other are, even some of the people you can qualify as combatants. I saw President Obama's speech it was in May, if I remember well, and he described the targets are imminent threat to the security of the American people and people you cannot arrest. And in the fact, even a small range militants, we documented the cases of people, they were just, lost. There was this revolution in Yemen. They basically demonstrated for the fall of the regime. And then seeing that it wasn't working, they went to the south to combat the central government with Al-Qaeda or whatever group. So in these cases, again, it's Yemeni internal affairs, and Yemenis do not understand why the U.S. do interfere in that. Whatever the flag they are fighting for their business in Yemen. But the thing is now, basically the thing is we don't have the cases on all the hundreds of deaths caused by the American strike, how many of them were top combatants and posing a real threat to the security of American people? That's the question we would like to ask, and we don't have any answer because no one is answering us for that. So that's why we try to document and to make it a bit clearer.
Right. Okay, now, so we still got about 15 minutes here, so I hope that you could get in depth and tell the stories of these individual lives and how they've been destroyed by the drone campaign there.
Yeah, so me, there is a story I really would like to tell, and because it touched me, and it's the story of three brothers of the same family. Two of them were killed by a drone strike, and one in fighting with the Yemeni army. But the story of this family is the Hassani family. So basically, the first brother, Bender, was arrested as he was 15 by the Yemeni security, and in a terrorist case. So he spent 3 years in jail in Sana'a for having been part of an Al-Qaeda-related group. The thing is, they had nothing against him, and he was severely tortured in jail, and he was released because innocent. He was judged and released because innocent. After the judge rendered his decision, he stayed another 6 months in jail before going out. During this time, his brother, Abdullah, was so upset from what happened to his brother that he went to fight in the south. And during Bender's detention, he was killed in fight. So he had the choice. Bender, when he went out, because he was in jail, because of his brother who was fighting in the south with the terror group and things, when he went out, he just wanted to be in peace and to restart his life. He was just 19. So, but he was harassed by security, Yemeni security. And then after 6 months harassment, because they wanted him to spy, because he told, okay, your brother was fighting in the south, so you have to give us information for free and things. So he basically fled to the south as well as a reaction of all that, and he was badly shocked of the torture he endured in jail. And he went there, and he and his brother engaged in fighting. It's not clear. We spoke with the father. We don't really know what they did exactly, but we know they went there. And we know from the father as well that in jail he was 15, 16, and he was with very old people. So, and people that were probably real terrorists. So the thing is, when you are so young, you go out shocked by this experience. I'm not excusing, but it's just to tell the difficulty of these people. He made the choice to go there. And then the security took the third brother, whose name is Abdel Majid. He was 16 as well. And he spent, the small brother, 3 years in jail without any judgment or legal proceedings as hostage, because they told the father, okay, you have to tell where Bender is in order we release your son. So the thing is, Bender was shot by a drone attack in it was January 2013, and Abdel Majid went out of jail for the aid, which was 3 months before January, so it's October, and 2 days after Bender was shot, he was shot in another strike. So the thing is, this family basically lost three of his sons, of their sons. And the thing is, these guys were not, of course, they did things. At the end, Abdullah was in fighting with the army. And Bender, he went there after having been arbitrarily detained for 3 years. And Abdel Majid was in a bad place because just after going out of jail. But what I want, so this story, what I want to tell to this story is, these guys were harassed and arbitrarily detained, and they reacted for that again. And the thing is, in the case of Bender, in the case of Abdel Majid, they could have kept them in jail. And if they were really dangerous for the security of Yemen and the United States, why didn't they keep them in jail? Why didn't judge them for what they did wrong? That's all these questions. The thing is, at the end, you have this family. The father, he lost three of his sons. The elder of the son was not over 26 or 27. They all have children. And now, okay, they have nothing, no money, nothing, and just their pain for themselves. And the thing is, again, the case of Abdel Majid and Bender, especially, they were detained. And the security intelligence were after them since they were 15, so they knew everything about them. So why just kill them? That's one of the things. And it explains something else. It explains as well the fact that some of the case, we cannot specify it, but we have high suspicion that in some cases you have the Yemeni who told to the American, these one are terrorists, just because politically they don't like them or for other things, and the American do after. And the thing is, then you have this problem of people hating the state, the United States, and the people. So the government of the United States and is doing it because they don't understand why you take me three of my sons.
Yeah, well, it's the same old story too, you know, going all the way back to Ayman al-Zawahiri and then Abu Musab al-Zarqawi both. They were a couple of nobodies until they were tortured by American sock puppet governments. And then they became the horrible terrorists that they became. So this kind of thing happens, you know. And Americans, you know, if somebody attacks our towers, Americans go join up the army. But they cannot understand that exact same sentiment in others. They just can't see it.
Yeah.
It must be the Islam that makes you so crazy.
Yeah. But I mean, my point is there are two clear things. The first is regarding the strategy of the United States. If United States leads such attacks to protect his people, I think it do exactly the opposite. Because me personally, I don't think a Yemeni are maybe one, but it's really weak percentage. But the thing is, when you see that going on, what you create is terrorists in the U.S., in Europe. You see people from the Muslim, European Muslim or American Muslim, seeing how the government deal with their co-religionaries abroad. They, at least I can speak for Europe, but in some countries they feel discriminated and have reasons to. And then they see how they kill people innocently. And then they want to carry revenge. And you create interior enemies by doing that far abroad. That's one of the things. And second thing, I think is again regarding the strategy of the states there. I don't understand. The thing is, I don't understand why they go on by strengthening them in charging them. But the thing is, at the end, we ask ourselves: there was a revolution in Yemen, and the revolution in Yemen, so as in other countries, could have been the way for people to, in a pacific way, develop political movements that can express the will in a peaceful way. And by being so influenced on this transition and being so influenced on this thing, sometimes we just ask ourselves, is it not the interest to keep this country unstable in order to preserve his interest, then let the all the process of the democratic transition allow people for more democratic and peaceful way of combating it, because knowing that people will not agreeing to let military in Yemen or to let them do as they are doing now. So that's another question I ask myself when I come back, because I cannot understand how. I mean, I'm sure the senior security leaders in the United States are not just stupid people not understanding what they do. So that's a question I'm asking myself.
Well, you know, there are cynical interests who prefer to just keep us at war, and then and you know, I don't know. There are Hellfire missile salesmen that, you know, have to keep their numbers up, and who knows what. But certainly there, it's not reason behind the policy. Not certainly not reason and the national interest behind the policy. You got that right. You're right to be confused, you know.
But and the thing is, I want to say something as well from the Yemeni people we met there, and that's something they say. Every single people say, they say, look. Al Najla attack in 2009, for example, I don't know if it's the exact figures, but I can imagine. They say, okay, they fired 4 Tomahawk cruise missiles on Al Najla. Each Tomahawk is $1 million, the cost. They say, if with $4 million they came to Al Najla to just put electricity, water, the world in the middle, and just basic infrastructure, you can be sure. So Majala was civilians killed. But the thing is, people do not understand in Yemen, and they tell us, why do they spend $1 million in bombing us as if they want us to love them? They could just invest them in developing this south of Yemen. The thing is, all the money from the states coming there is for weapons and to buy weapons to the. So not all. There are, of course, development things, but that's something I heard several times. Why do you spend $1 million in bombing us as we don't have even water in our house, we have to go to the river or the thing. So that's something that touched me as well when I was there and I met with people. And they're right, I think. An activist there told me you cannot combat terrorism by force. You can just combat it with culture and education. And the thing is, there is a huge lack of infrastructure and state and development in south of Yemen where these groups are strong.
Yeah, well, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, part of it, I think, as silly as it sounds to say it this way, Kareem, a big part of it is just that Yemen is so far away from here. And so the people being blown apart, they're kind of imaginary, even to me, and I care, and I make a point of caring about it. But it's so far away, and most Americans, they can't smell the burning bodies, they can't hear the screams of the wailing grandmothers and whatever, and so it's just unreal to them. And TV will never show them the real pictures of this is what it's like to be a father whose young child has just been torn limb from limb by shrapnel, or you know what I mean? They don't expose us to it.
Basically, that was our purpose with this report and this investigation began. It's Yemen. It's not easy to go there. It's not easy to document it there. As Al-Karama, as Arabic organization, so it was founded in 2007 in Geneva. But so we have an office in Yemen, and we have some facilities to go there. Our office coordinator is Yemeni. He was journalist. He's a journalist as well. And so the thing was, okay, we had this access, and our colleague there is very good. So Mohammed Al-Ahmadi, who basically, he documented all these attacks. He filmed each of one. We have huge amount of videos now. We helped French journalists to go there to make a documentary as well. But the thing is, for American and we had a group of American, you know, probably them, Code Pink, and they went to Yemen a month ago. They met with our friend there, and the thing is, basically, it was the goal of this report. It was to name these victims, to try to ask, okay, maybe people are killed are not good people and things, but We are based on international rights and international law.
And individual rights. Yeah. It's really important. I'm sorry, Kareem. We're out of time. That's why I'm talking all over you here. We got to go. But it's so important that you do name them as individuals the way you do. And I really appreciate it. I'm going to do my best to keep spreading this thing around. Yeah. Thanks again for your time. I appreciate it.
No, thank you. I hope my English was not so bad.
No, you're just fine. That's Kareem Sayad at alkarama.org, en.alkarama.org, for the new report on the Yemen drone strikes. I'll post up on my Facebook page for you, too.
Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against our depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, y'all, Scott here, hawking stickers for the back of your truck. They've got some great ones at LibertyStickers.com. Get your son killed, Jeb Bush, 2016. FDR, no longer the worst president in American history. The National Security Agency, blackmailing your congressman since 1952. And USA, sometimes we back Al-Qaeda, sometimes we don't. And there's over 1,000 other great ones on the wars, police state, elections, the Federal Reserve, and more at LibertyStickers.com. They'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at TheBumperSticker.com. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else is stickers suck.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new project, Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. They've got two new audiobooks read by the deepest voice in libertarianism, the great historian Jeff Riggenbach. Our Last Hope, Rediscovering the Lost Path to Liberty by Michael Meharry of the 10th Amendment Center is available now. And Beyond Democracy, co-authored by Frank Karsten of the Mises Institute Netherlands and journalist Carl Beckman, will be released this month. And they're only just getting started. So check out listenandthink.com. You may be able to get your first audiobook absolutely free. That's Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. First of all, thanks to the show's sponsors and donors who make it possible for me to do this. Secondly, I need more sponsors and more donors if the show is to continue. ScottHorton.org/donate has all the links to use PayPal, Give.org, Google Wallet, WePay.com, and even Bitcoins to make a donation in any amount. You can also sign up for monthly donations of small and medium-sized amounts through PayPal and Give.org. Again, that's ScottHorton.org/donate for all the links. To advertise on the site or the show, email me, scott@scotthorton.org. And thanks.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. I think you ought to consider subscribing to The Future of Freedom, the journal of the Future Freedom Foundation, in print or online. The Future of Freedom features the best writers in the libertarian movement, the fearless Jacob Hornberger, individualist anarchist Sheldon Richman, and crusading journalist Jim Bovard, along with Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Tim Kelly, Richard Ebling, and many more. And the July issue features one by your favorite radio host on America's Middle East policy, entitled Stupidity or the Plan. So head on over to fff.org/subscribe and sign up for The Future of Freedom in print or online. That's fff.org/subscribe and tell them Scott sent you.